The briefing today unplugs people's creativity by embracing the wonder of change. It seeks inspiration from maverick innovators and change makers to share their stories, experiences, and dreams. Turbulence and uncertainty are still strongly present in our professional and personal lives. How we see, think, and explore trends is influencing the way we imagine possible future scenarios, eventually informing our decision. Today, I'm joined by a friend and colleague, David Kalish, to go beyond the classic 2x2 scenario matrix, exploring a novel approach to scenario design. David is Associate Professor at the Department of Management and Strategy, Paris School of Business. He merges future studies with economics. Welcome, David, and thank you for joining me at the briefing today.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's fantastic. So the briefing today has a multidisciplinary audience. Let's start by defining trends in your context as a futurist.
So when we talk about trends, I think that sometimes I have just a little bit different opinion than other colleagues who are also doing the same job being a futurist. And I see the trends a little bit longer in time horizon than most people think. During the pandemics, this unprecedented time, we see the explosion of so many people who think about scenarios, who talk about trends, but it's quite crucial to understand what the trend is. And I think that whatever happens today, it's already in our life. It's not the trend. It's something that is here. It can emerge really quick and it can disappear really quick. And those are the elements that we should call as fads, and trend in general needs a little bit longer time to mature. So if we think about something that will happen at least within 1 year, that could be a trend. So that's quite crucial that we have to understand there are different time zones, starting from very popular these days, new normal, which is the trend that will be visible within 1 year in the mainstream. And there are three different zones, the reactive zones from 1 to 5 years, innovation zone for 5 to 20 years, and our favorite foresight, which looks beyond 20 years. So I think that when we look at trends, we need to understand that it's not necessarily something that happens today. What we see today are those only signals of change that allow us to build a landscape of possibilities, but not the trends right now.
So my understanding is that there are different ways of defining trends based on the context that you're looking. If you're looking 1 to 4 years, are some specific trends. If you're looking at more in 20, 40 years from now, we can see some emergence now, but we cannot call them trends because they might affect us in 20, 40 years.
Analyzing trends and looking for trends, trying to capture this landscape of possibilities, as I say. Normally, the simplest method is to define two horizons. One is the time horizon that I already mentioned. And second one, again, the simplest one, it's the steep framework that we all work with. It's similar to pastel analysis. So we look at social aspect, technological aspect, economical, environmental, and political at the end. So we have five different categories and four different time zones, and that allows us to capture what's going to happen in some certain area of our life in some certain amount of time. So we need at least those two dimensions to be a little bit more specific about the future. The funny thing is that as humans, we never had and we don't have still possibility to predict the future, but we're never stopped trying to imagine it. So that's why it's so exciting to work with future studies and with scenarios and trends.
So based on the steeple analysis, that maybe you can explain a little bit more for those that are not familiar with steeple or pestle, and from the time frame, 1 to 3, 3 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 to so on. Those are the two bases to spot trends. But how do you go personally on spotting trends? What's your methodology on spotting trends and understanding if that trend is actually relevant or is misleading our perception?
Mm-hmm. Of course, there are many different approaches to trends. So I'll explain a little bit more how the framework works and how to spot those trends. So going back to STEEP, for those who maybe will dream to join us in exploring the future, we have to look at every single element from the STEEP framework, which is how the society looks like, what are the social changes today, and what are the customers' needs. Second thing is the technology that is around us. It could be technology linked with businesses and also the technologies that we use as end users. That we see how the economy looks like, whether we have a growth or maybe some recessions, shocks like we have right now. The environmental part, so climate change could be an interesting element to look at, maybe carbon dioxide emission. And finally, the political aspect that is combined with the legal one. So is there any certain laws? For example, here we can think about the European Union from our perspective, because I live in Paris, so we can have a look what are the French regulations, but what are the regulations from the European Union, for example. You can think about an interesting example that for now, if you're not coming from the European Union, you cannot come to France because it's not possible. So we have those five different elements that are around us somehow. On the other hand, we can think about the time frame. And as I said, very popular since the pandemic started, something that we call new normal. And new normal, it's something that we define in future studies that will reach the mainstream. Mainstream, it's the element that most of the society take it. It's something that we do on a daily basis within maximum 12 months. So this is kind of new normal. It changes our patterns of behavior. It changes the way we understand things, the way we see things, and the way we behave on a daily basis. Later, we jump into the reactive zone, which is 1 to 5 years. It's interesting because business sees innovation in this time horizon, and in future studies, we don't, because we see innovation a little bit farther. It has to be longer than 5 years, and it could be up to 20 years. Quantum computing could be the example over here. We know that it's coming, but maybe not as fast as we thought. It's going to change a lot in terms of the way we analyze things, the way we understand technology today, but probably we need a little bit longer time until we're able to finally use quantum computing. And something which is, I would say, the most exciting, the foresight zone, it's longer than 20 years from today. And this is where imagination plays a very big part, because we're trying to imagine very different, crazy scenarios. One example is, I recently talked to my dad, who had this interesting task at school back in the 60s to draw how the future will look like in the year of 2000. And he said he was drawing flying cars, the buildings made completely different that they've seen in the 60s. And here we are, almost 60 years, over 60 years later, and still cars don't fly. There are technologies that start to work on this, but sometimes the future, it's not as fast as we think. And finally, going back to your question, how you capture these trends, the most important thing is to create some kind of trend signals collection, I would say. And there's a small, even tiny thing that you see today that could influence your future. Once you spot this element, then you can think about to which category of STEEP you could define it and where it can have a huge impact on the entire society. So when this trend will become major trends. We say that new normal and reactive zones, so this from today to 5 years, are the leading trends, something that is visible by most of the society. But when we jump into innovation zone and the foresight zone, those are emerging trends that don't have direct influence on us today.
Mm-hmm. And those can inform our design of possible futures and possible scenarios. And during one of our conversation in the last months, you talked me about a 4+2 proposition of advancing the classic methodology of doing design scenarios.
That is true that we've discussed different way to look at the scenarios, especially your field of expertise is really exciting here, because I think that design plays a very big role in terms of this creative process to think about the future. And most of the futurists know, but those who don't know, so there was a scientist called Jim Dator who backed at the end of 70, that was in 79, created a framework to look at different type of scenarios. Later, it was updated something about 20 years ago, but still this framework is 40 years old. But in short, it talks about four different possibilities that we can face in the near future. And it could be growth, so the future is better than you think. The opposite, so collapse, so the future is worse than you think, something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. It could be constraint, sometimes called adoption, so the future is exactly as you thought it's going to look like. And my favorite one, transformation, that is going to be something completely different. We didn't even think that we're going to be in that particular future. But because as a scientist, we like to work with frameworks, with tools, I was thinking that maybe it's a time that we should update it a little bit, this tool, to have this kind of broader picture. And I decided to add two different future scenarios for this framework. And that's first element, which is divergence. Sometimes businesses, and not only businesses, they disengage from what they were doing previously, and they go into completely different path. Sometimes they do it because something bad happens, and sometimes because they see a huge potential somewhere else. And the second element is think about the scenarios as a cycle. So whatever we're facing, and I think pandemic is a really great example of that. It's how to think at scenario number six, which I called a cycle. That something repeats. So something already happened, but we have it again. I would say that this is quite a different approach to think about future, because normally we think about future from a linear perspective only. So we can think about our age, or about growth of Earth population, or increase in computers data, or increasing number of patents, or acceleration computer processing, as I said, or even globalization. These are all linear changes. And we know that on the planet where the resources are limited, this exponential growth, it's impossible. It has to have a limit. And sometimes we have these turns in terms of economy that they repeat in cycles, like, for example, even planning and harvest, birth and death, or day and night, seasons, migration, stock prices, economic recession, pandemics, seasonal sales or interest rates. These are all examples that come to my mind right now that are example of a cycle. So we can think about finding some pattern. I wouldn't call it benchmark, because that's far different from benchmarking, but some pattern of how the same situation was solved in the past, and did we learn something? And we can see today that although this is not the first pandemic, for example, we didn't learn much, but maybe it's a time to finally be ready for a similar scenarios for the future, and see it with a better perspective, and try to find maybe better solutions, not only for us, but maybe for younger generations. Because what I find so important in these six scenarios that I'm proposing, I hope this framework will gain some popularity, but we'll see. I think that when we do even little changes today, sometimes they are not visible to us really quick. So we can think, okay, we're doing something, but it doesn't have a big impact. But maybe it will have impact to our kids, to younger generations. So this kind of trend that it's somehow popular with futurists of being good, I think is very important to have a look at this, and try to make a better space, not only for yourself, but for those who will profit this in the next maybe decade or two.
Yeah, and I think on what you just said, that the last type of scenarios, the cyclical one, it's very related to framing generation. You know, generations are cyclical. There is one generation, there is another one, there are some generations that are overlapping within each other. So that kind of can inform how we can look and make decision on building. And I don't know if there is this concept of called infinitive game. So we are not competing, but we are all playing for a game that doesn't end, you know. And if we look at society and generation don't end. There are cyclical one finish, but there is another one. So
absolutely,
that's kind of interesting to explore these kind of scenarios that is not close, you know, wrapped around one defined futures, but it looks of maybe being like a full step of a future before and a future to come.
It's great for what you just said, that we make it very clear for the very beginning in when we, for example, have an industry conversation or conversation with our students or in some webinars. There is never the possibility that there is only one future. We have like many futures that can happen, and it's up to us to decide which future is going to happen. Many people ask us this very popular question, tell us if the future is going to be better, if it's going to be worse. And my simple answer is like, we don't know, because it's up to us what's going to happen. We still have a possibility to make a good change. But if we don't react, if we don't do it, of course, we're not going to have this positive future. So it's up to us how this is going to happen. And of course, I absolutely agree with you that generations are also an element of the cycle. Very often we use this tool and invented by IFTF in California, which is called look back to look forward. So if you don't look at the past generations and you learn some lessons about how your parents, how your grandparents lived and what you inherited from them, you're not being able to move on. This is a huge, huge gift from the past generation that actually tell us what kind of dangers we should stay away from and what kind of opportunities we should search for in our external environment, I would say, just in general, not only my personal life, but all the elements that around me on a daily basis.
Yeah, and we are very interconnected, especially nowadays. And I think we mentioned multiple times in other episodes that the pandemic is an example of how globalized we are and how connected we are and how fast negative event could, you know, what affect the entire world and how we lived until that point. But you mentioned something very important at the beginning, that we cannot predict the futures and we cannot live the futures yet. Maybe one day there will be someone that invents return to the future machine. You also talk about bringing gaming and gamifying futures to experience them.
Well, I think that games are quite a different approach to learn about new possibilities. They can affect us in the world. And the great thing about games is that you can actually test the games with different generations. So you can let our silent generation, which are people 65 plus, to play. You can play with adults, with teenagers, and you can play with kids. And those have quite different points of view about our future. That's I'm always happy when I have like fresh students who are like under 20, because, well, I'm not that old, but almost twice older than them. And they have totally different way of seeing things. And I think we need this kind of different pair of glasses to look at our environment from a different optics, different perspective, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to discover that. So I work with many games linked with future that have been already created, like, for example, one thing from the future, or a future tarot, which has nothing to do with regular one, of course, or the Futurium cards from Germany. Or recently, we've just found actually together this parallel universe game, which is dedicated more from kids, but not only. But I'm also working on developing my own game, which is which will be called Previstory. Previstory is a very interesting concept that was created by one of the Polish science fiction writers, Stanisław Lem, the same one who wrote Solaris. So probably our audience will know. And there was a great book published in 1979, so quite a long time ago, which was called Futurological Congress. And there was a story that there was a journal, everyday journal, that was called Previstory, which is the science of prevision. So you could go to the kiosk or to the store and buy a newspaper, but you could read the news from the future, not from today, which is quite different. So and also combining this those elements that I've said earlier, the four time horizons, the six scenarios, and the steep. So instead of two, my plan for the game, create this kind of prototype for the game. It's on one hand, instead of two dimensional, having three dimensional futures. But some talented people from design like you are needed to make a perfect prototype for that game.
Yeah, so using gaming to explore the future is also a good way to bring different people together, because gaming is something that is accessible to many. So that's a good purpose to explore different generations in one place.
Yeah, on one hand, a different generation, that's one thing, and that's how we should start with. But playing the game in different parts of the world, that's another dimension that is crucial over here. So I don't know if this will be possible, but this is how we try to structure this game, that we'll try to use images instead of text to allow the game to be played whenever you want, in Africa, in Europe, in Australia, in Asia, in North or South America. And usually our culture defines how we think about the future. And I bet even in Europe, on our old continent, if we play the game in Spain, in Italy, maybe in Poland, in France, people will think about different characteristics, because the history shaped the country in a little bit different way. We have different historical background and also different daily issues to cope up with. So I think that the dimension of different generations, so on age and our culture based on our location, the place that we live in, are quite important to manage those elements of exploring this great creativity that in this case has no limit. I know that we very often says that creativity has no limit, but actually when you take different generations to play and different cultures to play, the outcome can be amazing.
Absolutely, yeah. I can't look forward to try this game when you do it. Tell me more about Urgent Optimism, because I think this kind of, you know, situation require optimism. So that's an interesting concept that you mentioned a few times to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was one of the parts of the future course. So also look back into IFTF part that was called exactly the same way. But I do think that maybe, I think always, but especially from 2020, when the pandemic started, we need this urgent optimism. Why? I said earlier that we don't know which direction the future will take, if it's going to be this growth or this collapse, so if it's going to be better future or worse future. And I said that it's us up to us. And without this urgent optimism, we're not going to be able to finally make it better. And sometimes people are using different elements for scenario planning that are linked with science fiction movies or science fiction films and books. And of course, I'm not criticizing, because sometimes I do it a lot and I'm looking for some inspiration over there. But we have to say that the literature, science fiction literature and the movies are full of very, very, very negative scenarios. There is some bad technology that comes. The world is in danger. Someone's going to attack us, or we'll have an invasion. But what if we could try to look at the technology, for example, from a positive perspective? Not necessarily that's going to be something that takes our jobs, but creates new possibilities. There is besides of future studies, also teach some courses linked with economics, sometimes with some marketing as well. And there was just a great book published in the United States. It's not available in Europe yet, which is Marketing 5.0. And the sub headline for the book is Technology for Humanity. And this is how I understand this urgent optimism, that there are very different solutions that can make our lives actually better. They can make this future better, not necessarily only for older people, but maybe for all of us, for you, for me, for little kids, and for our planet in general as well. And your approach is very important, because without optimism, we cannot create good futures. And we don't have much time to wait, because especially in these difficult times as we have right now in 2021, this optimism has to be urgent. And I hope that it will allow us, I'm sure it will allow us to finally find the solutions that will make our lives better, our planet better, and we'll have a possibility to go back to better times. I think this is not possible today to go back to this form of normality that everyone is talking about right now. And we've been asked so many times this question, can we go back to normal? It's a transformation that we'll be facing. We'll be living, but in a different perspective. There was this great workshop that we did, for example, to create at least four different scenarios. Imagine two situations. Number one, COVID disappears. Number two, COVID stays. So that's your like one dimension. And second dimension is, are we going back to the way we lived before the pandemics, or we remain changed somehow? And automatically you have four scenarios. Everything goes great, or COVID disappears, but maybe we still wear masks and we have to keep social distancing. Or maybe COVID will be like a flu. Everyone's going to have to take a vaccine every year, and it's coming, it's disappearing and coming back, disappearing and coming back. Or maybe COVID stays and we will have to work some different crazy mask or equipment to be scared and protected somehow. I think this is not going to happen, but scenario planning is fascinating, that you have to see the big picture. You have to see all the possible changes that you can face. And this urgent optimism allows you to at least use the opportunities that are being created and avoid the worst scenario and the worst thing that can happen.
Absolutely. And I think we have a recipe there. We have optimism, creativity, futures, scenarios. Now we just need to put all these together and explore what could be actual futures and make decisions towards that futures. Just before we go, what's the last book or the book you're currently reading?
Well, I'm reading quite a lot of different things all the time. Marketing 5.0 was not a book linked with the future studies, but I really recommend it, because it shows that it's Philip Kotler who wrote the book. It was out on the market in the US in 22nd January, so just a couple of days ago. It says that technology for humanity is the solution that we should be working on. So that's one thing. But if anyone wants to learn about what happens this year, there was a great book of Peter Diamandis, The Future is Faster Than You Think, published last year. And I think it's amazing element to see what are the changes that are being seen, how explosion of population in our cities on the way we live faster, how people are starting to move into big cities, how China is exploding exploding in a positive way with their like business solutions, with their economical growth. Probably it's going to be the first biggest economy in the world. But every year there are many possibilities to look only 1 year ahead. This is what people like, because it's a very, very funny thing, because people don't have the same tendency to look far into the future, but they have something that I call narrow visioning. What's important for me, it's what's now or soon to now. So usually at the end of the year, there are many possibilities to look at the prognosis, what's going to happen next year. Not all of them happen, but if you're interested, I'm fine with economics. And my PhD was in economics as well. The Economist published, it's still available in stores, The World in 2021, how different parts of world will change this year, including the politics. So that would be one magazine that is really worth looking at. And from the technological part, it's American The Wired, who also published once a year. They do this special edition. The title is the same, World in 2021, but from the technological perspective, and all the perspectives linked with STEEP, I would say. All of them are there, so you can have a look what kind of changes, what kind of technology, not only innovations, but what inventions are there available on the market. Maybe you don't use them yet, but probably you're going to start using them very soon. And some of the products are looking exactly like the products from the future.
Awesome. Thank you so much, David, for being with me today and showing and sharing with us your expertise. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, and good luck with exploring your positive future with urgent optimism. Thank you very much.
The Briefing Today unplugs people's creativity by embracing the wonder of change. It seeks inspiration from maverick innovators and change makers to share their stories, experiences, and dreams.